migration is a human right, and I think that nobody has any right to stop anybody from going to wherever it is they want to go, especially when we know that, you know, doctors have complained about what should be done to make their work easier. And government agencies, whether it's the executive, legislature, or the judiciary, are not doing the right things. So it's essentially a law just to emasculate doctors and dentists, and it doesn't make any sense.
Nigerian medical and dental graduates are emigrating in droves to high-income countries such as the USA, the UK, and the United Arab Emirates. In response to this crisis, Representative Kaniyu Abiodun-Johnson has sponsored a bill amending the 2004 Medical and Dental Practitioners Act regarding Nigeria-trained medical and dental practitioners, so they will have to work in the country for 5 years before they are granted a full license. To discuss this bill with us today, we have Dr. Ifeanyi Sofo. As a global health equity advocate, he will bring unique insight into the state of the health workforce retention in Nigeria. This insight is bolstered by his past experiences at the Nnamdi Azikiwe University Medical School, where he graduated as a medical doctor. He has since gone on to train in community health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine and strategic frameworks for nonprofit organizations at the Harvard Kennedy School, Health Policy and Health Economics at Jesus College, Oxford University. Simply put, his contributions to this discussion cannot be overstated. Welcome, Dr. Sofo.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Today, we'll be interviewing Dr. Sofo. So I'm Ulrich Sydney.
Desmond Jumba.
Hi, Des.
Hey.
Dr. Sofo, you led a large study evaluating the scope and the determinants of the Nigerian health workforce emigration. What prompted this study and what were your key findings?
So that study was, titled, Emigration of Nigerian Doctors. And I did that while I was, the Director of Policy and Advocacy at Nigeria Health Watch. It was a partnership between Nigeria Health Watch and NOI Polls at that point in time. Because brain drain, especially within the medical field, has always been a big deal in Nigeria. To be honest, I left medical school in 1998. As far back as in the 90s, my lecturers were emigrating to Saudi Arabia for better pay, better conditions of service, although theirs, was for short periods, they would come back to Nigeria. So brain drain has always been a big deal. And that's why for us, we felt that, okay, maybe it's time for us to hear from doctors, themselves. Doctors who are already in Nigeria and thinking of emigrating, and some who have emigrated, to see the reasons why they emigrated. And to be honest, as profound as the findings were, it was also in a way a bit underwhelming, because we found out that the reasons are just so basic that if the government was serious about addressing issues that doctors and other health workers face, they would do that, without really thinking so much about it. Findings like, better pay, better conditions of service, or rather poor pay, poor conditions of service, lack of equipment for you to operate as a doctor, being taxed multiple times by different agencies of government. And just at the end of the day, it was just very clear that, the things that make doctors leave Nigeria for other clients are things that can be solved because it borders on pay and conditions of service.
So there's a bill that was introduced just a few weeks ago in Nigeria, the anti-brain drain bill. Can you tell us specifically what this bill is pushing for? I think Ulrich spoke a little bit about it in the introduction, but can you tell us a little bit about that bill?
Well, I mean, the much I know about the bill is that, the lawmakers want to put in a law that would mandate Nigerian doctors and dentists, to work in the country for 5 years before they immigrate to any other country that they want to go to. So in essence, it's almost like trying to gag or rather bind doctors and dentists from migrating. migration is a human right, and I think that nobody has any right to stop anybody from going to wherever it is they want to go to, especially when we know that, you know, doctors have complained about what should be done to make their work easier. And government agencies, whether it's the executive, legislature, or the judiciary, are not doing the right things. So it's essentially a law just to emasculate doctors and dentists, and it doesn't make any sense. And you know, I've been very vocal about this, whether speaking about it or also writing about it. It doesn't. There are other ways to address the brain drain by doctors. Let's not forget there's also brain gain. Because to be honest, while I was in Nigeria Health Watch, every year we had a Future of Health conference. I think our Future of Health conference for 2018, the theme was, you know, brain gain. So we're looking at, yes, doctors and other health workers are leaving, but we also know that doctors and other health workers are also getting, going back to Nigeria, setting up practices, you know, and solving issues. So it's just one of those things that, you know, somehow it kind of balances out. People go, people come. It balances out. You can't stop people from traveling because you're through a law. Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
There are a lot of studies that focus on brain drain. I wonder how many studies have been done to actually figure out how many people are coming back, right? The brain gain part of the equation that you're talking about. So perhaps that's something that needs to be investigated if it hasn't been done yet. But I'm curious, you know, those who support the bill, they say that, you know, the government has provided subsidies to medical students over the years for them to attend public schools, right? So this bill, in some ways, is almost like them paying a debt that they owe to taxpayers and to the government. What do you think of this argument?
So, I mean, I understand the argument that, you know, government in Nigeria subsidizes tertiary education. However, it's not just for doctors. They subsidize tertiary education across the board. If you're studying some courses in Nigeria in public schools versus private school, you will know the difference in terms of school fees. So it's not just doctors. So for me, now singling out doctors and dentists, you know, to come up with a law to stop them from migrating just shows the inequity in it, because they are not just the ones you're subsidizing. But apart from that, let's also look at the fact that, look, we know that Nigeria's problem is really not... Nigeria is not a poor country. Nigeria is just a country that, you know, so much wealth is being stolen by a few. Because think about it, close to 80% of the crude oil Nigeria generates every year is stolen. So if we had those resources, and this is back at government, whether it's the executive or the legislative, to ensure that, you know, they protect the commonwealth so that they can use it to support the education of people. And there's no doubt, again, that we need to review the school fees in public tertiary institutions in Nigeria. I totally agree with that. But in doing that, you need to set up mechanisms. So for instance, if you increase the pay, what about people from low-income communities? How do they go to school? Do you have scholarship schemes for them? If you increase the school fees for tertiary education, do you have loans, student loans that people can take? So give us different options so that I would decide, okay, I want to take a loan, pay for my medical education, then migrate and pay you back, you know, based on our agreement. But you just cannot have one law that, you know, one fell swoop and say, we will not allow you to travel for 5 years. The lawmakers have forgotten that in Nigeria, in terms of licensing a doctor, once you graduate, you have a provisional license to practice. After that graduation, you do your housemanship. At the end of your housemanship, you have your full license to practice from the Nigerian Medical and Dental Council. I don't know how they intend to navigate that. Are they going to tell the Nigerian Medical and Dental Council not to license doctors until after 5 years after graduation? It doesn't make sense. So, and when we let's not even get into the pay of legislators in Nigeria. The average Nigerian senator gets an allowance of about $450,000 a year. That is equivalent to the salary of the U.S. president. So we know where the resources are going to and how they are being stolen. So they need to get their act together and really find ways. I know that deep down for some of them, it's, okay, how do we deal with the fact that doctors, health workers are leaving? Fine. You know, but there are other ways to deal with that apart from just establishing a law. Even the UK and the US, where UK, especially where Nigerian doctors migrate to. UK doctors are migrating to the US or Australia, so it's, or Canada. It's, you can't stop people. You know, right. Let people do, you know, migrate to where it is that they feel, as long as they are doing it legally.
You mentioned the disparities between the resources that lawmakers in Nigeria have access to and what the rest of the Nigerian population has. When we're looking at the Twitter announcement by the House, some of the comments below actually highlighted that. They said, you know, if you're going to stop the doctors from migrating, we would appreciate it if you got all your health care in the country.
Yeah.
And because it was a big debate in the country when at one point in time, the president Buhari was finding himself getting all this care from the UK. And it's very often, not just in Nigeria, in all of our countries where we see our leaders leaving to go to these places, usually on the taxpayer's dollar. And when this argument comes up, we wonder, is this going to follow suit? Are you going to stop them from going? And are you yourself not going to go and get healthcare there? Now, there is the other argument that people bring often, and this was highlighted during COVID, that health workers are essential and they have made a commitment to service and helping their communities. And communities are, like those in Nigeria, are a lot more vulnerable than those in the UK and the US regarding your comparisons of people living in the UK and the US. And these proponents will say that Nigeria is in a dire situation, so it requires drastic measures. So you were at the forefront of the COVID-19 advocacy discussions, and these kinds of discussions happen in the US and the UK, where healthcare workers were saying, yes, we are essential, but that does not mean that we can live in certain conditions. So how do you put that into perspective, where there are definitely good arguments from both sides, and how do we move forward from that?
So to be honest, I think this talk about healthcare being an essential service, I think it's something people should forget. Every service is essential. Because think about it, a few months ago, people didn't have Naira. People didn't even have access to Naira in Nigeria, and that kind of grounded the economy. So every service is essential. I think it was just the argument that, you know, that we've been used to for just so many centuries. So every service is essential. But see, if a doctor is saying that, I want to work, but I want you to give me equipment to work. I need to work, but I want you to... Do you know how many health facilities across Nigeria have running water inside the doctor's consulting room? A doctor will see a patient and wash his or her hands inside a bowl of water. Do you understand? A doctor is saying, I'm a surgeon. I want to operate. I want to make sure that people have access to the best surgical care. There's no power. I'm operating, the power goes off. And we have to bring out our mobile phones, you know, to use as power of, inside the theater. So it doesn't make sense. What doctors are demanding for? It's not that much. And I can tell you for sure that if you provide some of these basic things doctors are asking for, a number of doctors in Nigeria, especially the senior doctors, will not migrate. Because they've gotten to a certain level in their career where, look, really, you know, they've really achieved so much in terms of impact. You know, and all they're just asking is, you know, pay me better, give me a better condition of service, make sure the equipment, even ensure that my family is protected. In Nigeria now, there's so many parts of the country you cannot even travel to. So if you're asking a doctor to go to a rural community to go and work, fine. What conditions have you put there? Is there security? Is there water? So these are the things that it's not, you know, like we say, for the lack of a better expression, it's not rocket science. And let's even look at the allowance of these legislators. That 450,000 that a Nigerian senator takes can train almost 20 doctors for 6 years. That's one senator takes in 1 year. Do you understand? Wow. You get where I'm coming from. So who are the ones who are wasting resources? So we know, for me, the issue with Nigeria is a problem of leadership across the board. But that is the president, governors, and all those legislators. You know, I think they still see themselves as lords and not really there to serve the people. When they get to that realization, they'll begin to make more people-centered policies. and not this kind of draconian laws. It won't work.
It seems like the bill was introduced without much consultation, and it has received significant backlash from different organizations and doctors and practitioners in Nigeria, right? The Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors, right, came out condemning the bill and even comparing it to slavery, right? So it looks like there was not much consultation that was done with many of these major stakeholder groups, right? And some have even called the whole thing to be canned, plain and simple. It shouldn't move forward at all, yeah. Right? But others are arguing that, like you said, canning it will be a missed opportunity, right? Because having the debates in the house and in the streets can help advance health workers' cause. Question is, do you think that there was enough
consultation,
and number two, should the bill be canned, or is this a missed opportunity to really advance the cause of health workers?
So obviously there was no consultation. They just ganged up and came up. It's just typical of lawmakers in Nigeria. But I think that let's look at some of the positive unintended consequences of this bill. The fact that people are now interested, people are debating, people are talking about it. So I think it's created that environment for Nigerians at least to begin to even prioritize their healthcare. Because if I'm being honest, Nigerians do not prioritize our healthcare. We ascribe everything to God until it's too late. So it's very, very important that we're having this discussion now. And it's also an important discussion because, what they are talking about eventually is all about Naira and Kobo, money, financing of the health sector at the end of this. So we need to have this kind of discussions to say, how do we provide more resources to fund the healthcare system in Nigeria? And government should also know that they cannot do everything. Sometimes, you need to create that enabling environment for other people to bring their resources into it. Even for Nigerians to pay from, to also contribute to healthcare. And that's why in the piece that I published in my Medium account, I was saying that in the past, I'd actually advocated that the high out-of-pocket expenditure in Nigeria should be channeled towards health insurance. Because 77% of healthcare expenditure in Nigeria is out-of-pocket. Nigerians pay for it. What government, and when I say government in Nigeria, federal government, state government, local government pay for healthcare, it's just about $1.1 billion compared to $7.7 billion that Nigerians pay out-of-pocket. And for that kind of transition to happen, channeling that high out-of-pocket expenditure to health insurance, government must set up policies in place that people can trust in order to put in their money to back that system. Although they did not consult, fine, but at least Nigerians are awake. Nigerians are asking questions. Nigerians are pushing back. I don't even know if they've had any kind of public hearing at all for people to make their own contributions. Deep down, some of them may have, a genuine desire to make our health system much more functional, but the way they've been going about it is not the right way. We need to think creatively about how to bring more money into the healthcare financing space so that we can fund. Do you know that there are some states in Nigeria as we speak that are employing doctors from North Africa?
Wow.
And paying them in dollars. It's crazy. In fact, years back when I worked with one of the international NGOs, Pathfinder International, I had gone to one of the states, in fact, the president's state, Katsina State, and after, we're supporting different health facility types across different states, I'd gone there after interacting with doctors in the clinic. In the evening, we're just sitting out, and they were complaining to me that the governor just employed Egyptian doctors some few months back. These Egyptian doctors don't understand the language. They don't speak Hausa. They don't understand the culture. They don't understand the way people do things. Most of these Nigerian doctors ended up translating for them. And yet, these Egyptian doctors were paid like 20 times what they paid their Nigerian colleagues. It's crazy.
But why would the government do that? Why would, there's enough healthcare workers, doctors that are trained. Why would they go to Egypt?
Well, that is the $64 million question. Why? You say you don't have money, but you can pay one Egyptian doctor 20 times what it would pay a Nigerian doctor that is willing to, that is even already working in that same health facility. So we need to get our acts right, because people also tend to forget sometimes that Nigeria is a federation. So the federal government, the state government, the local governments have their own responsibilities as far as healthcare is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So even if federal government says we don't have money, you as a state governor, you should be able to prioritize your own budget within the state to attract doctors and other health workers to yourself. You cannot say because federal government say they don't have, you won't have. Now, in Nigeria, the primary healthcare, which is the bedrock of healthcare, is under the purview of local councils. How many local councils are functional in Nigeria? It's the same state governors that emasculate them and take their funding and make it in such a way that the local councils do not work. So do primary healthcare. And at the end of the day, anybody who understands the health system knows that, at least according to WHO, 80 to 90% of the healthcare needs of an individual throughout that person's lifetime can be provided at the primary healthcare level. And that is not doctors. Those are other caterers of health workers. You know, so we need to get our acts right. These legislators are just raving mad. It doesn't make any sense what they are trying to do. Let's have a more holistic discussion about financing healthcare, ensuring that Nigerians are brought on board to pay their own part of it, but also that different levels of government, state, federal, and state, take up their responsibility and run with it the way they should.
One of the, you've mentioned something that is very touching in all this saga, the fact that there is a whole breakdown between not only the populations, the doctors, and the lawmakers, but we also see this even within the global health space. I've always been amazed at the lack of understanding or living that happens in big global health conferences or events. I mean, every time we read amazing papers about healthcare workforce and goals for 2030. But then when you listen to some of the things that happen, not just in Nigeria, but other countries, it's insane. You mentioned the Egyptian situation, but the Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors, they're talking about the fact that on average, a Nigerian doctor has to wait 6 to 8 months before they can even get maybe a posting. And even when they get that job, they may wait even longer to get their very first salary.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the narrative is spun, it's about almost making them look like they're being greedy. Mm-hmm. Or I think 3 years ago when the Minister of Health was confronted by Nigerian doctors who wanted posts for residencies, and he told them they could either go and become farmers or tailors. And he was boasting about his attire that had been sewn by a former physician. You know, and this is a minister of health that was at one of the conferences with the WHO leaders and signed those documents about health workforce. And here we are asking people to work for 5 years in those conditions. I mean, from your experience from Nnamdi Azikiwe, your path all the way outside of Nigeria and working with these organizations, path and with the people maybe that you went to school with and the people that you met, how has this discrepancy between what you were living firsthand and what the narrative was given about the situation, how has that motivated your choices or even your path?
Okay, I think to answer that question, let me tell you, when I was in medical school, in our final year, we had a yearbook. And I was the chairperson of that yearbook committee. One of the questions that we put in the yearbook was, where do you see yourself in 10 to 15 years' time? This was in 1997. And I can remember what I wrote there verbatim. What I wrote that was that I saw myself as a plastic and reconstructive surgeon in a fancy hospital abroad.
Abroad?
Yeah. Hmm. So think about it, even as a young doctor, because like I told you, a number of my lecturers were already, you know, traveling to other countries, work for 1 or 2 years, come back. So that mindset was already there. So it's not a new thing. But guess what happened? By the time I finished my housemanship back in the teaching hospital, and now went for my youth service, because in Nigeria, once you graduate, you have to do your youth service for 1 year. And I went to my youth service. I served with the Nigerian Army in a very busy general hospital kind of setting in Abuja. That was when that whole thing jumped out of my mind, right? Because what I realized was the problem, even as a young doctor at that point in time, was that most of the cases I saw were preventable issues. You get, so for instance, a mother rushes in a three-year-old baby, you know, severely anemic, highly febrile, you know, almost going into shock. What happened? 2 weeks ago, the child had fever. They started giving all sorts of concussion. And, you know, by so doing, you know, they wasted a lot of time. Sometimes you battle so hard and the baby survives. But sometimes if they came really, really in severe shock, because you may not even have the right equipment to care for this child, the child would, unfortunately, you lose that child. So that's why for me, at that young age, I decided that my focus will be preventive care. It's better for us to stop people from going through this trauma of illness and even the added cost of payment. Even as a young doctor, I saw myself either paying for patients or serving as shorty for them, you know, to say, okay, if they don't pay, I will pay later. But that is not sustainable. But that was when I decided that I would focus on preventive care. It makes more sense. Let's not even get people to fall sick. Let's get them to, you know, have better health-seeking behaviors and all. And so I think when you look at all the arguments, you see that even if you go to a medical school now, you interview 100 doctors in Nigeria, 100 medical students, I can assure you that at least 95 are planning to. Some of them are already writing their PLAB exams to go to the UK. So you're there talking about laws. Fine. People are planning to, you know, to migrate. And even the so-called money that they say they spend to train doctors in Nigeria, it's not even that optimal. Because what kind of equipment did we have, even as doctors in training, at, you know, way back, and currently even in public schools, when you think about it. So it's still not even enough as what is required to train a doctor in the 21st century. You get, so you just can't stop people from migrating. It's not done.
Right.
Give them different options. Let them decide whichever one works for them. You know. And...
Right. So, just a few weeks ago, I think it was a few months ago, there was a Nigerian doctor who's like, I think it was a pediatrician.
Yes.
Who
matched
into some residency program in Virginia. You know, we don't know why, you know, he decided to immigrate, but that was a headline. I'm sure you read about it.
A professor, actually.
I think it was a professor, right?
Yeah. In his 50s. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, in his 50s. And so that people started talking about, you know, this is, you know, congratulations to him, but this is really a problem, right? If professors are matching into residency and going into that residency program, he may have one of his students as his attending or as his, you know, chief resident, right? Mm-hmm. So it points to a symptom, right? And perhaps what this bill is trying to do is address a symptom to a much bigger problem, right? So perhaps to close off, you know, Ifeanyi, would like to know from you, what should the Nigerian government be doing, you know, if it's amending or improving on this bill that has been introduced? Because there's a conversation going. We're having this conversation. It's an important conversation. So that is maybe a good thing. But what should they do to address the root cause of the problem rather than focusing on the symptoms and introducing bills that will not solve the problem? What do you think should be done?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it in that piece, in my piece that I wrote. Because the doctors themselves said so in 2018. They've said what they want. Mm-hmm. They said, we want better conditions of service. We want mm-hmm. better pay. We want equipment to do our work. We want, you know, we want a better tax system that would help us at least have a healthy take-home pay at the end of it. We want a situation where our children have access to good schools, you know, where security is ensured for us and our families. So what the doctors are asking is not too much. The doctors are not asking that you build one, you know, world-class facility that they will work in. No, but just basic things. Basic things as ensuring that there is power. You get what I mean? Basic things like that. Basic things, you know, like ensuring that, you know, there is water. Because even for me, when I was a clinician, it was just so uncomfortable. You see a patient, you have to wash your hand in a bowl. They throw away that water. You see another patient, you have to wash your hand in a bowl. And all you want is just a tap with running water. And think about it. What is a tap with running water? Even if there is no water, no tap water connected to that building, you can have a tank, you know, that has, that is piped to the consulting rooms. That's what doctors are asking for, you know. And doctors are asking, with the kind of risks that we face providing care in Nigeria, we also need to be protected. And if you look at doctor salaries, clinicians, you see something called hazard allowance. Do you know how much it is?
No.
It's about $8 a month. 5,000 naira. Hazard allowance.
What is this hazard allowance supposed to cover?
So hazard allowance covers the hazard you're going to face. It's almost like an insurance, covers the hazard. So if you get an infection or something, or you're injured, you know, things like that. So you're telling doctors, with everything that we're dealing with today, with all the threat of infectious diseases, you're giving dollars doctors in Nigeria $8 every month as hazard allowance. It's crazy. And so you want the doctors to stay and be taking the $8? It doesn't make any sense. So it's almost like, is it the horse before the cat or the cat before the horse? Well, doctors have said what they want. The question is, what efforts have government agencies made to provide those things that doctors want? If we're saying power, with the preponderance of solar energy now, you don't even, it's not rocket science again. You can make sure. What if government comes up with a policy and says every health center in Nigeria must have solar, must be connected to a solar system? That's it. To ensure that, you know, you have 24 hours uninterrupted power supply. So, and that's why for me, when you look at all these things, you realize that doctors in Nigeria are not asking for much. If you provide some of these basic things, a number of doctors will not migrate. Let me tell you, a number of doctors migrate to Sudan, where they are fighting now. A number of Nigerian doctors are in Sudan. Nigerian doctors are everywhere, because I think in Africa, Nigerian doctors are the least paid. And it's shocking to my colleagues from other African countries when I tell them this. But Nigerian doctors are the least paid across Africa. I want somebody to show me a country in Africa that is paid least than Nigerian doctors. So they've taken these things for long. And you know, younger doctors now are no longer as uninformed as when I was in medical school. I mean, now you have WhatsApp, you have social media, you cannot eat your folks. People know what is happening real time. You know, our time, I remember when I was in medical school, even to download a 10 megabyte file, we do it overnight. You know, so think about it. We thought we were actually, you know, kind of privileged at that point in time. But when we compare ourselves now, to be honest, we didn't know anything. So it's more difficult because people know what conditions exist elsewhere. We're not even talking about the West, even across Africa. Doctors go to different countries to work. Nigerian doctors go to those different countries to work. So if government is ready, they should provide those services. And they would see how that would impact on migration of doctors.
100%. I mean, when you're mentioning that the information age's impact on the current situation, it's very, very germane. You think about not just going outside, you think about being in Nigeria, being in places like Lekki. It's difficult to have someone and tell them that Nigeria is poor when you see what you see across the streets in Nigeria. You see people flying over the Abuja and Lagos traffic with like helicopters. And you find out you're trying to learn about what's happening. Oh, it's senator this and governor that. I mean, it's tough. It's tough to stop people from wanting more for themselves, more for their patients when they see those things. Really, thank you so much for being with us today, especially because this is not just about Nigeria. All that you described today can be applied to other countries, honestly. We see across the continent is very, very similar. For our viewers and our auditors, you can read some of Dr. Sofo's contributions in the New York Times, on BBC, Al Jazeera. He has a Medium page. We'll be sharing the link below. so you can stay abreast of his work, but also the progress of this amendment as things move along. Once again, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nsoho.
Awesome. Thank you.
Pleasure. All right.